This is always a time of year for some serious reflection, because two of the three great monotheistic faiths enter a season of faith. But one has to ask, faith in what? Ritual? That resolves nothing. The great lessons of faith are the greatness of individual possibility. For whatever you may conceive divinity to be, the lessons of Moses and Jesus were simple ones, timeless ones, and universal ones. That an individual with a passionate universal message can express mankind's transcendent yearning for redemptive change. That individuals move history. That individuals give courage. That individuals can steer our destinies to good or to ill. That it is that faith in our own individual possibilities that gives us hope, in the words of the Greek poet Aeschylus, that we may tame the savageness of man and make gentle the life of this world. We spend a great deal of time, and quite necessarily and quite reasonably, discussing the challenges to what amounts to civilization, man's happy encounters with progress being challenged by a new kind of ism, a new kind of terror. And what makes this war on terror so difficult for many to conceptualize is that it's transnational. Many groups crossing borders, striking with almost impunity wherever they want. Interestingly enough, however, there is only one national threat that poses the possibilities of confrontation with the West. There is only one national threat large enough, with a philosophy strident enough, with a leadership willing to sacrifice its people, and deadly enough. And that is Iran. But with Iran, the great paradox is that here is the most Western-looking country, the most outward-looking population, a country of remarkable sophistication, remarkable education, with a tremendous dissident diaspora leadership. Now, when I talk about leadership, we're not talking about people sitting around a table planning what they're going to say or do in tandem, but what Robert Kennedy called hundreds of centers of energy and daring, each creating a ripple, and those ripples coming together as a tide that can tear down the mightiest walls of resistance and oppression. And whether it's Amir Tahiri in London or Nazreen Mohammadi in Los Angeles or Homa Arjaman in Toronto or our guest today, who I'll introduce in a moment, the world has not seen a group as bold, as eloquent, as courageous as the Iranian dissident diaspora, fighting for universal principles of justice, not just to free Iran, but universal principles that put us all to the test of what we are as people. And it is only through the leadership of these people that the world may avoid a confrontation with what is quickly becoming a superstate, a state capable of waging war against the mightiest nations in the world. But because of this aristocracy of moral courage in civil society that's willing to stand up and speak truth to power, as our guests tonight have done, that there is the possibility that in this season of faith, if we have faith in ourselves to work with these brave and bold souls, that we can avoid a confrontation that many see as inevitable. And I must tell you that having worked closely with the Soviet dissident movement in the 70s and 80s, today's Iranian dissident diaspora has the same energy and the same eloquence. And frankly, the world hasn't seen such alliances, since those that rose up to give proof of mankind's resolve of conscience in those groups around the world that supported the Sakharovs and the Sharanskys in that era gone by. And we have that same responsibility today, again and again and again, whether it's fighting for the rights of a single individual jailed in the infamous Evin prison, whether it's fighting for the rights of the people of Iran to liberate them from a recalcitrant and retrograde regime of mad mullahs. They have great leadership in the world, and much of our future and much of our destiny will be decided by whether we have the faith in ourselves, in our own individual possibilities, to stand shoulder to shoulder with these people. We'll be right back with our guests, Nazanin Afshinjan and Paya McEwen. Many of you remember Nazanin Afshinjan's successful struggle to free 19-year-old Nazanin Fatahi from imprisonment in Tehran's Evin prison and the death sentence that awaited her. She's now taken her campaign for human rights in Iran to another level, calling on the Iranian government through an international campaign to stop all child executions. Since 1990, Iranian courts have sentenced some 21 minors to death. Several dozen now await execution. And most of these crimes are of such a low nature that in Western countries, these children would probably be sent to foster homes, not to prisons awaiting execution. She started a new online petition that's going to international leaders. And this time, it's important that you bring your organizations into it. We're going to get into that in a moment. Paya McEwen is an international law professor at McGill. He was a founder of the Iran Human Rights Documentation Center. He was also a former war crimes prosecutor, senior advisor to the senior prosecutor at the International Criminal Court. Paya McEwen has long been in the forefront of the fight to bring many of the Iranian leadership to justice, but particularly the case of Saeed Mortazavi, the Tehran prosecutor responsible for the death of Zahra Kazemi. As you may remember, Prime Minister Harper called on Germany to arrest him when he was going to Geneva. Mortazavi changed his plans, got back home safely. This past week, Nazanin Afshinjan and Paya McEwen got together at the House of Commons, and Professor McEwen was making his argument to the subcommittee on human rights in the House of Commons, to a subcommittee of the Committee on Human Rights of the House of Commons, that Canada should move under the Torture Convention and implement its own investigation into Mortazavi. This would be a first, and later in the hour we're going to be joined by Jason Kenney and hear his views on this. Nazanin Afshinjan accompanied Paya McEwen to this to his presentation and later on to a meeting with the Prime Minister. We not only have two great champions for Iranian freedom, but two great champions of our national character coming together in common cause. And Nazanin Afshinjan, Paya McEwen, welcome.
Thank you so much, Beryl.
Paya, can you hear us?
Yes, Beryl.
Let's start, ladies first, with some politesse. Nazanin, your new campaign to stop child executions in Iran, people can go online at www. Let me just give this out right off the top. Petition online, one word. Petition.
No, it's something easier than that. Just stopchildexecutions.com.
But that's not, is that the petition site as well?
Well, there's a big banner on the first page where people can click on the petition.
Perfect. Stopchildexecutions.com. This issue came, has always been part of your mindset and part of your thinking. How did it come about to take this to the next level after the Fatahi release?
Well, after Nazanin Fatahi was released, we noticed that there was 30-plus other minors on death row in Iran. And in order not to have to save one life at a time, we thought this is a time to take a stand and try to permanently end these executions of minors, because Iran is the only country in the world that officially continues to execute minors. And it's time to change the laws and to put pressure on them to do so.
And you're invoking Article 37A of the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child, that no capital punishment shall be imposed for offenses committed by persons below 18 years of age. Iran is a signatory of that convention, right?
Yes, Iran signed these conventions. However, they interpreted it in their own way. Instead of saying that we won't execute anyone who's committed an offense before the age of 18, what they do is that if there's a 9-year-old girl who commits an offense, they wait till she turns 18 and then they carry out the execution.
Both of you are using the tools of international law to underline Iran's failings, but perhaps to shake up the regime. Paya Makovan stated to the House of Commons Committee, the United Nations Convention Against Torture provides that a state party shall, quote, take such measures as may be necessary to establish its jurisdiction over the crime of torture when the victim is a national of that state, and if that state considers appropriate, the exercise of extraterritorial jurisdiction to protect Canadian citizens against international crimes is wholly consistent with both Canadian and international law. Paya Makovan, what kind of reception did the committee give you when you said that, when you challenged them to go ahead and get this guy Murtazavi, who was not only the chief prosecutor, but almost as a thank you, Ahmadinejad then named him as Iran's representative to the Human Rights Council? What was the reaction of the committee to your arguments?
I think the reaction was very favorable, and it's evident from the fact that the committee adopted a motion formally calling on the Government of Canada to begin a criminal investigation against Saeed Murtazavi. And I think that in particular, Jason Kenney, who is the chair of the committee and Secretary of State for Multiculturalism, who will join us later, I think played a very important role, as did Erwin Kotler, former Minister of Justice. And I believe the motion was tabled by Mario Silva, who's Member of Parliament for Davenport in Toronto. So, frankly speaking, I was very surprised. I thought that we would simply be there to propose this idea, and then we would have to continue lobbying and arguing. And I think I probably speak for both Nazan and I was stunned when they
you had all party agreement. Paya Makovan, Nazan Afshanjan, just hitting up. I'm just up against the clock. We'll be right back with both. And if you're a cell phone user, *940 on Rogers, *940 on Bell. We're talking to Professor Paya Makovan and human rights activist Nazan Afshanjan. Paya, just before the break, and I apologize for not looking at the clock. You were talking about your pleasant surprise at all party acceptance, and that the committee didn't just give you a nice hearing, but actually voted out a resolution to proceed to the next step.
Yes, I think, Beryl, that there is now widespread support for this move. And it's very clear on the one hand that this is no longer a matter that can be solved through bilateral diplomacy with Iran. The idea that the Iranian judiciary would bring Zahra Kazemi's murderers to justice is totally naive. It's the judiciary itself that's the problem. It's the judicial institutions which are the instrument of repression for dissidents in the country. And at some point, we have to realize that diplomacy has failed and that this is really a matter for our justice system. And I think the point here is that Zahra Kazemi was, after all, a Canadian citizen. The Charter of Rights and Freedom speaks about Canada as a multicultural society. We benefit from the tremendous wealth of experience and skills and resources that immigrants bring to our society. And we have to also accept the burden that we will have Canadian citizens that will be dual nationals. They will go back to their countries. And when they are in a situation of distress, then we have to protect their rights. So to me, this is also a question of upholding the rights of all Canadian citizens and sending the message that we as a society will not allow our citizens to be brutally raped, tortured, and murdered with impunity.
Now, both your works, of course, have another aspect to it. Nazan and I remember through all the shows we did together and all the work on the Fatahi case, many people were saying, oh, it's very nice that Nazan Afshanjan is doing this petition, but she's going up against this brutal regime. They're never going to bend. But they bent.
Yeah.
So the work that both of you are doing, the reliance on international law that some people might think is perhaps a bit too naive, the work actually has resonation on the ground in Iran. Word of Fatahi's release is talked about on the street. The fact that somebody in the world is chasing Murtazavi is talked about on the street. Is it? And that gives people their courage, does it not?
It definitely does, and it's really only by supporting the dissidents from within, the women's rights groups, the labor unions, the youth movements, that we're going to see change. basically they're ready and willing to step up to this regime. They just literally need the support of the international community, particular governments like the Canadian government. And that was one of our aims also, speaking before the Subcommittee on Human Rights, trying to bring the message that Canada needs to assume a leadership role and step up as a leader of justice. Canada must differentiate itself first from U.S. foreign policy, which considers military intervention as a possible solution, and at the same time differentiate itself from Europe, who has been appeasing Iran for years through futile dialogue. So it's now time for us, the Canadians, to support the dissidents from within to stand up, and I think we'll see positive change.
Paya McEwan, I raised the parallels earlier. And I want to address it when we come back. We've got another break coming up, but and please reflect on this answer. We saw the Soviet dissidents literally through Zamizdat, through underground pamphleteering, underground tapes, get out the word back and forth from inside the Soviet Union and the West. In Iran itself, Khomeini's came to power through cassette tapes. I want you to explain to our audience when we come back exactly how initiatives like these are heard about on the street in Iran, and what kind of feedback you get and what kind of courage and what kind of support that gives to the people there. We'll be right back with Paya McEwan and Nazim. And tonight we're talking about your confidence in individual possibility. Do you understand that in this season of faith, the messages of faith are that individuals can make a difference? And we're about to be joined by a very special guest who will be joining Nazanin Afshinjan and Paya McEwan, with whom we've been talking. And before I introduce this very special guest, I just want to go back to Paya McEwan for a moment. Paya, I asked you before the break how your work gets to the street, how people find out about it, and how it resonates in Iran.
Well, I think that Nazanin expressed it very eloquently. The pillars of strength in Iran are the students, the women's movement, the labor unions. And we can see in history that soft power very often has very far-reaching consequences. Whether we're speaking about Mahatma Gandhi's resistance against British colonialism, the Orange Revolution in the Ukraine, the Rose Revolution in Georgia, the Velvet Revolution in Czechoslovakia. And I think that therein lies the future of Iran for a genuine democratic transformation, rather than simply replacing an anti-Western tyranny with a pro-Western tyranny, which is often the only thing that the major powers are interested in. And in the case of Iran, I think that there is a kind of psychological warfare going on. Why else would the regime be throwing hundreds of webloggers, 18-year-old webloggers being put in Evin prison, journalists, women's rights activists? The regime realizes that its biggest enemy are the Iranian people, not the United States, not Israel, not some sort of foreign conspiracy. So I think that we need to understand that the people in Iran, they are savvy, they're sophisticated. Nazanin explained in our testimony in Ottawa that there are more Persian language weblogs than any other language other than English.
And that is the new underground, the new Zamizdat. For all the work of individuals, which is so important, and we're going to get back to the whole Iranian dissident diaspora in a moment, there is nothing like a partnership with a government of conscience. One can argue in politics, in the public arena, about fiscal questions. One can argue in Canada, as we do, about power sharing between the provinces and the federal government. That does not define us as a people. What defines us as a people, and where we have been part of man's last best hope, is where we have engaged in mankind's struggles for redemptive change, where we have stood shoulder to shoulder with all those who want to assure the survival and success of liberty. And it's been a long time until the election of the Harper government, where we had a prime minister who has made our positions clear in Kandahar that we don't cut and run, at La Francophonie, at the United Nations. And within that government, there have been few voices as eloquent and as clear and as courageous of speaking truth to power as out of the Secretary of State for Multiculturalism and Canadian Identity, Jason Kenney. Whether it's on standing with democratic allies in the Middle East, whether it's speaking truth to China on human rights, or whether it's giving support to the efforts of individuals like Paya Makovan and Nazanin Afshinjan, Jason Kenney has been at the forefront of all these struggles. And Minister Kenney, it's my great pleasure to welcome you here tonight again, and thank you for taking the time to be with us.
Great to be here, Beryl.
Minister Paya Makovan was saying that before he made his presentation to the committee, he was expecting a nice reception, but he wasn't expecting it to be taken so quickly to the next level with a resolution coming out of it, and he credits you with a great deal of that. How did that come about, and where do you think it's going to go from here?
Well, how it came about was I think that what we're looking for out of the committee hearing that we had was some tangible, deliverable step forward where Canada can meaningfully express its concern about the oppression of the Iranian people. And so both Payam and Nazanin in their testimony raised, of course, the tragic and unbelievable crime committed against Zara Kazemi, a Montrealer who was, as we know, tortured, raped, and murdered with the complicity of the Iranian regime. And so they, what we decided to do, listening to their testimony, just quickly drafted up a motion that the committee adopted last week, calling on the government of Canada to launch a criminal investigation into the complicity of the sadistic prosecutor general in Tehran, Saeed Mordezevi, in the torture and murder of Zara Kazemi, in order to move towards an indictment for his arrest. As you know, last summer, the Prime Minister authorized an effort to stop Saeed Mordezevi, who outrageously showed up at the United Nations Human Rights Council inaugural meeting in Geneva to thumb his nose and that of the Iranian regime at the civilized world. And the Prime Minister, I think it was actually Payam who through back channels, let the government know about that, about Mordezevi's planned presence at the UN Human Rights Council. The Prime Minister reacted, I think, in a way characteristic of his leadership, of his principled leadership, by authorizing a request to Germany to detain this killer on his way back through Frankfurt.
Minister Kenney, I'd like to get into that in just a moment. I'm just up against the clock. We're going to take a short break and come right back with Minister Jason Kenney, Paya Makovan, and Nazanin. And we're talking about Canada and Canadians and how our involvement with the Iranian dissident diaspora community and their leadership, two of whom are with us tonight, Paya Makovan and Nazanin Afshinjan, can perhaps help make that kind of internal regime change we're looking for in Iran that could avoid a potential conflict that seems to be on the horizon. Our very special guest, Secretary of State for Multicultural and Canadian Identity, Jason Kenney. Minister Kenney, just before the break, you were getting into the incident where Prime Minister Harper asked Germany to extradite, to arrest, and then extradite Saeed Mortazawi, the Tehran prosecutor who has been accused of being responsible for the death of Montreal photojournalist Zara Kazemi, when he was going to fly through Frankfurt on his way to Geneva to the Human Rights Council meeting where he had been appointed as Iran's official representative. That was a very proud moment for me as a Canadian and for many, many others. And I just go ballistic when I hear critics on the left say that, well, our government's policies are dictated in Washington. We were the first country to even think of doing that. Well, and that message hasn't gotten out enough.
Absolutely. And on a lot of things, by the way, we were the first country to deny landing rights to members of the dictatorial regime in Belarus. We were the first country under this government and a lot of exercising leadership in a number of different files like this. But with respect to Mordezevi, it was an instinctive response on the part of the Prime Minister. It probably wasn't what, quite frankly, the official Ottawa would like to have done, because it was Canada going to uncharted territory in terms of seeking to extend our authority against somebody for whom we did not have we hadn't developed a case against him. But what Payam and Nazanin have suggested is to the Prime Minister directly and the Human Rights Subcommittee is that Canada should take the steps to build the evidentiary case so that should this man ever step into a place where he could be arrested and extradited, we would have the case pre-made against him. And both Payam and Nazanin made this publicly, I think, in a very compelling way to the Prime Minister in a private meeting last week. And I think I'm hopeful that the government will take up the challenge and move the ball forward.
Do you know, Minister, I've said so often in this program and in writings that I don't think labels mean what they used to mean 10 years or 20 years ago. Left, right, conservative, liberal. Decency means something, and you just said something very important, that the Prime Minister's instinctive reaction was not what official Ottawa would normally have done. And I recall the time when in the Kennedy administration, when federal troops were sent into Alabama, when federal troops were sent to the University of Mississippi for James Meredith to go in, and official Washington said, this is not the way things have been done, there's no precedent for this, and the President and his brother, the Attorney General, Robert Kennedy, said, if there is no precedent, then we shall create one.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's the right attitude. That's the right spirit. And I just want to, while I'm on the air here, pay particular tribute to Payam and Nazanin, because, you know, they are, I think, the most vocal and articulate representatives of the Persian diaspora community in Canada. And, you know, taking the kind of public positions they have is not without risk. Let's not forget that leaders like them were targeted by the Iranian regime in Europe and paid a serious price for speaking out against the repression of the Iranian people. And I just have so much admiration. It's easier for people like myself, I think, in public office to take these positions than folks who have a real personal stake in this.
Everybody has to lead, but when a nation sees its leader setting a moral high ground, then people like Payam Akhavan and Nazanin Afshinjan get more and more allies in the people. I think people instinctively want to be good. They want to be courageous, but they need that kind of leadership. They need examples of it to find the courage within themselves to do that. And only within that kind of communal strength can people like Payam Akhavan and Nazanin Afshinjan not only be successful in their efforts, but be protected in the work they're doing.
Beryl, if I may just interject, I must reciprocate to the great potential embarrassment of Minister Kenny, my deep admiration for him, because I think you really expressed it very clearly that without the support of people like Minister Kenny, without the support of the government, ours becomes a very lonely struggle and a very difficult struggle with very limited means. And I think that more often than not, one despairs. Given the overwhelming task of, you know, trying to humanize a regime such as that in Iran. And I think that it's particularly befitting that Minister Kenny has the portfolio of multiculturalism and Canadian identity. And as you said, what is the Canadian identity in the sort of, you know, post-national cosmopolitan world that we live in? At the end of the day, we have to stand for something. And I think it's very important for us to link our multicultural identity with transcendent human rights values. So I want to, you know, place on record once again my tremendous respect for Minister Kenny for his support.
Likewise from me as well.
Minister, I thank you for your time. I promised I wouldn't keep you long, but I want to underline something that Payam and Nazanin have just said. A people that don't stand for something will fall for anything. And you personally and your administration is helping us see what we need to stand for.
Beryl, and a word for you, because unfortunately, Payam and Nazanin were addressing this critical global issue, this critical human issue. There were no media bothered to come out, and you're one of the only media outlets that's actually covered, I think, a significant development that came out of their efforts. So kudos to you as well.
Well, we do it, and we do it godly and frequently. Thank you,
right,
Minister
thank
Kenny.
You.
Jason sure. Kenny, we'll be right back with Payam Akhavan and Nazanin Afshinjan. We're going to discuss the danger. And we're talking with Professor Payam Akhavan of McGill Law School and Nazanin Afshinjan, StopChildExecutions.com. Payam, Nazanin, you know, the minister said something interesting about the lack of coverage of what happened at the committee and of a lot of these struggles. And as I said off the top of the hour, a lot of people thought, Nazanin, when you launched your campaign to free Nazanin Fathahi, that, oh, this is very nice, but it's not going to go anywhere. Except mm-hmm. You made it go somewhere. If you will it is no dream. Payam, you gave the House of Commons a roadmap, for justice. For Zahra Kazemi. Do you get disheartened sometimes by Canadians not understanding that individual effort has consequence, can be successful?
Well, I think that there is, you know, we live in a kind of North American consumer culture mindset, for better or worse. I think that on the one hand, Canada is an incredible country with opportunities of freedom, rule of law, all the things which I greatly admire. But I also think that we go back to this question of Canadian identity, and I think sometimes we are an ungrateful lot, and we don't have enough civic consciousness, this is maybe part of this broader question of defining what we stand for, how much attention we decide to pay to human rights issues, which after all are about transcendent norms. I think that it is difficult, sometimes it's disheartening, but as Nazanin's case shows, with sort of relentless commitment, I think eventually one can vanquish the odds.
Another point that the minister made is that this is dangerous work. I mean, it's not without its consequences. It's one thing, to write and to be on radio and to organize demonstrations, and I have my share of threats. But I mean, you guys are face to face, in the face of a very serious regime that has murdered several hundred people throughout Europe and North America, if I'm not mistaken. You feel that in any way? Have you been subjected to threats, either of you?
I've had some hate mail, some death threats of sorts. I take it they're from some Islamic fundamentalists. They never really identify themselves, but the way they write, the way they say that I shouldn't be speaking out so openly about these women's rights issues and such, gives me an indication of where it's coming from. But I think the real heroes are those from within Iran, the women's movement, the Shadi Sads of the world, who basically stand up and speak on these women's rights issues despite the threat of being imprisoned, tortured, jailed, killed. And then the youth, the hundreds and thousands of youth who have stood up with placards demanding their rights and freedoms. And they're really to be commended.
They are, and that's another remarkable thing about Iran, because from the borders of Pakistan to the Moroccan Atlantic coast, you don't see that, but you see it in Iran, just as you saw it in the old Soviet Union. Paya Makovan, where does the Mordozhavi case go from here? What's the next legal step or technical bureaucratic step?
Well, the next step is for this motion to go to the House of Commons. And then it would be up to the RCMP to launch an investigation. And once the evidence is sufficient, the Department of Justice would indict. There would be an extradition request, which Iran would most likely refuse, at which point Canada could request an Interpol arrest warrant. And I just wanted to, further to what Nazanin said, share a bit of a personal story.
Very briefly, though, because we're running out of time.
Okay. Well, the point I think that Nazanin makes is that the people who are at the forefront of this struggle are in Iran, and they're paying dearly for what they're doing. So in a sense, it's the least that we can do. And when I was 16 years old, a 16-year-old girl by the name of Mona Mahmoudnejad in Shiraz was executed merely because she was a Baha'i. And I think from that time on, I realized that if she's willing to make that sacrifice, then surely anything that I do here is barely going to compare. So I think that in the end, courage pays off. And just like the people that are making threats against Nazanin are too cowardly to identify themselves, we have to realize that people who are committing tyranny, injustice, are ultimately cowards, and that moral courage will triumph in the end.
Nazanin Afshinjan, www.stopchildexecutions.com. Paya Makovan, thank you both very much. And I want to leave everybody with this thought in this season of faith. Tennyson's words, though much is taken, much abides. We are now that strength which in old days moved earth and heaven. That which we are one equal temper of heroic hearts, strong in will, to strive, to seek, to find, and not to yield. Thanks to Chris Bunbury and Master Control. We'll be back tomorrow night. Dangers within. And Afshinjan. In an action, Jen. After a brief break.